This is the Bridge of the Faithful podcast, featuring your host, Jenna Erlandson.
Hey guys, and welcome to the Bridge of the Faithful podcast. I'm Jenna, and we're all traveling this faithful bridge together. These episodes are just my documentation as I search to understand what faithfulness really means. You can find this and all other episodes at www.botfpodcast.com. You can find me on facebook.com/botfpodcast. You can find me on Instagram at botfpodcast. And if for any reason, and this one definitely for sure could cause anyone to want to reach out for more resources or just to get to know a little bit more, or just have someone to talk to, you can always email me, Jenna@botfpodcast.com. And today I'm really excited to be with the ladies from the podcast called Take Heart, which is a special podcast for special needs families to help them be empowered and encouraged. But these ladies have been just a huge part of my own personal journey with being a special needs mom, dealing with the grief and the guilt and the stress, and to know you're not alone. So they have so many good resources out there. They each have their own websites, but this podcast in general has just been a huge blessing to me. So I will have all the links to that in the show notes. We can lead you to all of those, and then they can share a little bit about themselves. And I just think you're going to be blessed by a lot of this. I know a lot of moms out there, this is part of the motherhood series, deal with mom guilt. And I feel like it's not a conversation that a lot of us are willing to talk about because of the guilt part, either with our own guilt in what we've chosen to do or how we feel we're doing or the things that we're not doing that we think we should be doing, all of those things. And I just want to let you know that you're not alone. And that's why we're having this conversation today, that there is freedom in getting it out there and knowing that this is a normal thing that all moms go through. You're not alone, and learning to give yourself grace. So we're going to start with an introduction with each of these lovely ladies telling us a little bit about their motherhood journey, and then we'll dive deep into the lovely conversation about mom guilt. So Amy, why don't you tell us a little bit about your motherhood journey?
Hi, thank you so much for having us. We're excited to be here and for your kind words about our podcast. I'm Amy Brown, Amy J. Brown, and I am a mom to six. I have three bio kids and I have three adopted kids. Two of my children have special needs. They both have attachment disorder. My daughter has attachment disorder and fetal alcohol syndrome, and my son has some physical disabilities. We adopted him from a Bulgarian orphanage when he was 10, and he also has attachment disorder. I'm also a transracial adoptee mom. Two of my daughters are Black. I've been a mom for 28 years, so I have 28 years worth of mom guilt I can talk about. And I'm married to my high school sweetheart. It'll be 35 years this summer, so that's my journey.
All right, Carrie, why don't you tell us about your becoming a mom story?
Sure. So my name is Carrie M. Holt, and I have been a mom for almost 18 years. I have three boys and then a daughter, and my kids are 18, 16, 14, and 11. And I've been married to my husband for almost 21 years. So my mom journey, of course, began 18 years ago, but my special needs mom journey began about 14 years ago. So my 14-year-old was prenatally diagnosed with a condition called spina bifida and hydrocephalus, and then he went into respiratory failure when he was about 2.5 weeks old and came home as a medically fragile baby with a trach and a ventilator and a feeding tube. And he has been in the hospital over 50 times and has had almost 60 surgeries. So we just have been in and out of the hospital a lot, and he has learning needs also, but his medical diagnoses kind of overrule a lot of some of the other things.
And Sarah, why don't you tell us a little bit about your journey?
Hi, I'm Sarah Klein. I have been married to my high school sweetheart as well. Next year will be 25 years. And I have two boys. I'm a boy mom. And my oldest, Connor, is 20, and he is in college right now. And my youngest son, TJ, is 17, and he is a sophomore in high school, actually going to be a junior. He is my special needs child. He, at the age of 8, right before his 8th birthday, was diagnosed with a degenerative and progressive fatal form of muscular dystrophy called Duchenne. And Duchenne's kind of a domino disease. It's just we fix one thing and that causes something else. So there's just a litany of different sub-diagnoses that go with it. But they're both amazing boys and wonderful sense of humor.
So as you can see, we all have different stories. One of the things that the four of us have in common is special needs kids, but mom guilt is not something that only goes to special needs moms. It goes to everybody. We have our own set of things that we might deal with that might be a little different, but the reason I got them together is because they did an amazing series on mom guilt on their podcast, which the link will be into as well. I just really wanted to talk about it because recently I've had a lot of moms sharing, I don't know if it's summer and realizing that maybe time in the summer when we're recording this is just brings out more guilt because you can't do as much, or you, if you're like me, you just get frustrated with your kids a lot easier when they're home all day. I'm not sure. But a lot of my friends have reached out for that. And I just felt like God was asking me to put out an episode talking about this so that you don't feel alone, that you know that you're not the only one dealing with this. It's normal. And God has hope in all of it, whether you are feeling guilty because you are not able to be the mom that you want to be in the summer or whatever time of year that you're listening to this, or if you're feeling guilty because you let your emotions get the best of you in a situation or anything like that. So we're going to talk about that for most of this episode. We're going to talk a little bit about how mom guilt is something everybody deals with, but we're afraid to talk about it. So are any of you willing to be vulnerable and share some of your own mom guilt stories? Amy, go ahead.
As I said earlier, I am a mom. I've been a mom for 28 years, so I have lots of years of experience feeling guilty. Whether it's about babies or toddlers or teens or adults, I've run the gamut of mom guilt. There are stories that I look back on and I chuckle because it really wasn't a big deal in the whole scheme of life. We laugh about the time that I dropped my daughter for camp in shoes two sizes too small. And she just went and I didn't have a chance to get her any shoes. And I felt really guilty. But now we laugh about it. But it's the moments that we can't laugh about that I think are harder. Those moments, and I can't even really give you a specific. I could give you plenty of specifics, but I guess I want to say is the moments where we just feel like we're not doing enough, or we're not being enough, or we are not enough. And I think those are the darker moments in mom guilt that we don't like to talk about. For me, having kids with special needs that are behavioral issues, there's a lot of mom guilt around their behavior, which is caused by fetal alcohol syndrome and other issues. But that can really take me in a shame hole quickly because I feel like if I was a better mom, I would have a better hold on their behavior or how they're acting out. I think overall, it's those times when I feel like I'm not enough that are the brings me into that deep mom guilt and shame that I could have done better, that I'm failing in some way. And I think those are the moments we don't talk about, and they're hard. They're hard to talk about.
Yeah, I feel like I put a lot of my identity in how good of a mom I am based off of what decisions my kids make and how well they behave. And that's definitely something I've been learning, that first of all, that's a lot of pressure to put on them. And that's a lot of pressure to put on myself when I have no control over what they choose. I can give them the right information and hope they make the best choice. But is that something that you've worked on getting over? Is there any tips that you have specifically for behavioral issues with kids? Is that an identity issue that you have too?
I would say that I've had to toughen up a little bit. Like you said, that's too much pressure on them. And we talked earlier today, we recorded a podcast about advocating for our kids. And I've had to say, okay, this is not a reflection on me. And it's really not a reflection on them, these behavioral issues. People may look at it that way. But for example, my daughter has fetal alcohol syndrome. Alcohol does that to the brain. So I think I've looked at it more recently as how can I advocate for them in this situation and not take it personally? Because really, I don't have a lot of control over that sometimes. I've had to have a tougher skin. I've also had to be a lot more gracious with myself, feeling like I have to solve it all right now. And also just the times I can't get out from under that guilt, shame feeling, just giving it to God and saying, I'm bringing them to you, God. You put them in our family. You're going to give us the grace. Kind of where I'm at with that. It's not easy. I will tell you straight up, it's not easy. But it's a constant renewing of my mind, of giving it to God, trusting Him with it.
Thanks for sharing that. Carrie, what about you? What's your mom guilt like?
So I thought it was interesting that you were talking about pressure that you put on yourself when your kids make decisions, because I think that's one of my biggest fears, is that my children will not turn out okay, that they will not be faithful to the Lord in their older years, and that would be all my fault. And so when I see them making choices, or I feel like I'm not doing enough, I am a self-proclaimed self-proclaimed perfectionist. And so I feel like I have to do everything perfectly. And we homeschool our four kids. I forgot to mention that in my intro. And then so there's this extra layer of pressure sometimes that I have to get it all right because it's all on me. I struggle with guilt that I'm just not doing enough. And then my son Toby just takes up a lot of time and care that I'm struggling and that I'm just not doing enough, that I'm not enough, and that it's going to be my fault someday when my kids maybe make the wrong choices in their future lives.
I feel like especially in the church, this is one area that we just don't talk about as much, where it seems like we're starting to get out of this trend, but the you must look like the perfect family and that you never mess up and heaven forbid your kid does something wrong because they're a teenager and still figuring out life, those kinds of things. So that does add a little bit of pressure for that. And not everybody's a perfectionist. I wish I didn't have that gene. So I totally feel you. I know there are a lot of moms that have been talking to me, especially ones with the teenager, preteen teenager year, that they're just worried that their kids aren't going to follow in the faith. Is that something you still struggle with? Or are you starting to get a little bit more peace when it comes to their choice of following Christ?
I will say that God has been giving me more peace about it lately because my oldest is almost 18 and he is just through the homeschool program that we do and just some of the fruit that we see in his life, some of the decisions that he's making. And of course, it doesn't mean that, you know, it'll always be this way. But I think what I've come to realize is it's just like your podcast says that we just are faithful. God doesn't expect us to be perfect, but I can pray for my kids and I can walk with him as faithfully as I can. And also remember that I'm not doing this alone, that the Holy Spirit is equipping me. And I have his power inside of me to help me through this journey as a mom.
I love how that takes some of the pressure off and reminder that God's got this even when we don't feel like we do. Because I don't feel like I have it most of the time. In some ways, kind of scary to give it up. But once you do, it's totally freeing because you don't have to feel like you have to do it. Amy, what did you want to add to that?
I did want to add to that because I have adult kids, so I can tell you, even when they're walking with God, they make decisions as adults. You're like, what? Like, what is going on here? But one time years ago when my kids were like, my oldest was 13, I went to an older mom I really admired, and I may have actually shared this on our podcast, but she had adult kids, and she said, your job as a mom, when they become, get closer to that age, is to pray for them. And she gave me this visual picture. She said, I picture taking each child by their hand and placing them at the feet of Jesus. That word picture has stuck with me for years. And when I'm worried about my adult kids, not even like things about the faith, but like they're struggling with mental health issues because it's been a stressful year, or things I can't control because they're no longer in this house, I just picture taking, you know, now they're big and tall with beards and they're not little anymore, taking them to Jesus's feet. And I always tell moms that. I know it's hard to let go of that. There's something about that image that just gives me so much peace because he loves them so much more than I ever could. So I hope that's an encouragement in that regard as far as older kids.
Yes, I think so, for sure. Sarah, what about you? How's your mom guilt going?
I think mom guilt for me just seems like it's the finely crafted tool that Satan uses against us. And once we think we get over a guilt, he throws something else at us. And you know, for example, when my son was diagnosed, we first were told that it was a genetic disease passed through the father. And my husband was devastated. He doesn't have a real sense of his biological background on one side of the family. And so he was trying to do digging and not getting very far. And he was devastated. I remember thinking, I don't understand why he's so guilty. He didn't know this. And then lo and behold, we go to the first doctor's appointment. And they're like, no, it's not. It's passed through the mother. And all of a sudden, it was a very different story for me. I think when you think about guilt and the kind of reference, it's like, okay, so I understood it when it's somebody else, but when it's mine, it's like, for me, I use imaginative prayer a lot, and it just helps me kind of work through some of my guilt or grief or whatever the emotion is. And for me, it's always like Satan standing in the corner with his feet crossed, smirking with his arms crossed over his chest, thinking, watch this, it works every single time. All I have to do is throw guilt at her and she's going to crumble. If something doesn't work, then he switches it. And that, to me, if I remember it that way, I think God's given me what I can do to combat that. You know, he's already given me anything that I need to combat that. And anytime I feel guilt, that's Satan talking into me and not God. God's not talking that into me. He does not call me guilty. He calls me many things, but guilty is not one of them.
one of the hardest things for me, for some reason recently, my oldest has the special needs. We were told we couldn't have kids. So it took me, I'm a nurse, and I don't know how it took me 9 weeks to figure out I was pregnant. So then I think through, like, did I do something in those 9 weeks that caused these issues? Or another thing now is, am I going to do something so horrible in my own emotional reaction, or just make such a wrong choice? Like, especially this year with COVID, do we homeschool? Do we send them to school? Is this one choice going to send them down a horrible path forever? And I need to remember that I'm not powerful enough to mess my kids up, or that God is way more powerful to redeem anything that I could mess up. But I feel like you're right. It's this epic spiritual battle that we as moms try to pretend isn't happening, or we're afraid to talk about. I just love how you put that picture.
Yeah, I think it is a spiritual battle. Like you said, it's just, and it's hard to talk about it, because I think sometimes if you give Satan that credit, for lack of better words, I almost feel sometimes if I acknowledge that Satan is battling spiritually right now, that I'm giving him even more of an umph in my life. Like, I'm giving him more credit than what it's due. But if you acknowledge it, then I think you understand more. Because even after I found out then that my son, his is a genetic disease and it was passed through the mother, but then we found out on the second one that his was a spontaneous mutation in the womb. You would have thought that I would have said, oh, okay, so it wasn't my fault. But then I thought, did I not take prenatal vitamins enough? Because I didn't know I was pregnant until I was 2 months. What was it during those first 2 months that I didn't do right? Anything? Did I bounce on a trampoline and I shouldn't have bounced? There's so many crazy things, and it has to be something that is feeding that to us. And so for me to put that into that, to always keep it forefront that there is somebody that is trying to make me feel that way, it almost makes me feel better that I know that I can just turn to God and just say, I need you to take this from me. It's like you said, we're not powerful enough to do that. We're not powerful enough to destroy our kids.
Yeah, Amy, what do you want to add?
I was just going to say that you don't have to actually birth those children to have that guilt. I was not pregnant with my daughter. I did not expose her to alcohol and drugs. But the guilt still, am I loving her enough? Am I loving her enough? Am I doing the right thing? I just think the bottom line is that regardless of what we're doing, no matter whether it's feeding them organic food or not, or, you know, like any of those things that moms feel guilt about, I feel like Satan, as Sarah said, any of those areas could be areas we could feel guilt about if we don't guard our hearts about that. When I first met Sarah, I remember her saying that, you know, she felt guilty about, did she do something wrong? And I was surprised by that, because I thought, well, it's the disease. You didn't cause that. But it's just as ridiculous to think that I caused, by not loving somebody enough, the issues that come with butyl alcohol. It's just, we just start believing the lie, and we start believing things that just aren't true.
I think this is helping me put it into a picture. I kind of thought of it as a spiritual battle until, Sarah, you were talking about Satan sitting in the corner and like feeding that to us and making us vulnerable in that way. Yeah, what do you want to say?
I would also add that in light of the spiritual battle aspect of it, is we spend so much time thinking, what are we doing wrong? That when we step back, and if we are to believe that we didn't do anything wrong, then who did? Someone has to be responsible. And for me, that was God. It made me so angry. I was angry at him so much at the beginning of my son's diagnosis. And then I felt guilty about that. And I look back on that now, and those 6 months that I really did not like God. I didn't like him. I didn't believe him. I thought that everything I had done was a farce up to that point. And I actually dove into the Bible to prove my faith wrong, because I thought everything I taught my whole life, it's a fallacy. And I'm not going to raise my children to believe something that's not true. And then once I got into the Word, I realized, oh my gosh. And it completely changed my walk. Because my point is that Satan is so busy throwing guilt around that he wants you to blame somebody, and that somebody is God.
I'm really glad you brought that up, because those of us that are going through these dark mom guilt times, which I believe every mom goes through at some point in time in their journey, I know that right now I have days where I'm mad at God, and then the added guilt of that. And I love that you brought that up, because I know there are other moms that are going to be out there thinking the same thing and feeling guilty about that. Do you feel comfortable going in a little bit more about how maybe God's big enough to handle our emotions in that, and how you worked through that part?
Sure. Actually, I kind of tell people that it was my adult spiritual temper tantrum. I hid my Bible. I put it in a drawer. I deprogrammed all the Christian channels. We have 3. I deprogrammed them off my radio. I hid so much. I stopped doing devotions. I stopped doing quiet time. I was livid. And I truly was trying to prove that my faith was wrong. By doing that, I'm a statistics and math major. And so for me, it's all black and white. And I just dove in and I thought, I need proof. I need research. And the research was in the Bible. The research was in historical records from the first century. And I dove deep. And the more I dove to prove it wrong, the more I realized how much I truly did believe and how much I just had kind of skimmed over my whole life. So I would tell people, first of all, and you don't have to do that. I'm not saying that's for everybody. But if you hear a verse, you hear something, sit and look at it. I would just say that you could just look at scripture, look at different Bible studies, Google. Google is amazing. I Googled, what does God say about me? And I found so many scriptures that God says about me, and not one of those is negative. And I listed those on a podcast in that guilt series. And that helped me so much just to look at all the things that God does say about me. And I would say, you don't have to have it all figured out right now. And the best thing you can do is, he has really broad shoulders. And like any good father, he knows you're not going to like him. He does things for us that we might not understand, just like we do things for our children that they don't understand. And just like we are there for our children when they do finally come around. My son's 20 and he's just now kind of figuring out that I'm not a complete idiot. I didn't walk away from him for the past 5 years just because he was in that teenage angst. I knew it was going to happen and I knew I still needed to be faithful for that. And that's what God does. He waits and he knows that you're going to come back around. You just have to be open to that.
I feel like just knowing that, you're proving that it's a safe place to have those emotions.
Absolutely. He is a safe place. I would just let everybody know that you're not going to say anything to him that he hasn't heard before and that he's not willing to work through it with you. I said some things that, I mean, it actually, like, I'm getting teary-eyed now, that I still will feel guilty about because I did have so much anger towards him for a while. And I know now, though, that that anger is what has built us a stronger relationship. And I have a relationship with God that I would not have had if it wasn't for the fact that I screamed and just really expressed exactly how I was feeling.
So speaking of your guilt series and your tips that you were talking about with that, can we switch a little bit to that? And you guys, do you have any specific things that you either give advice on or that you do yourself when you're feeling that it's almost an anxiety with mom guilt, that anxiety in, let's say, the acute stage of mom guilt where you're feeling awful or alone or in a dark place or anything like that? What advice would you give to a mom who is really struggling with being able to deal with that mom guilt? Go ahead, Sarah.
Like I said earlier, I am really big on imaginative prayer. And if people don't know what that is, it's just basically where you use your imagination and you put yourself in a story and you and God are center stage. And so I have one whenever the guilt really starts to rear up, is that I imagine myself driving down a road. I turn, I get lost. And that's Satan in the passenger seat telling me, you know, nope, you got to go this way. And all of a sudden I'm in guilt and shame. For me, I have to just mentally pull over and kick him out and let God ride shotgun. And say, okay, so what would the directions out of guilt and shame be for me? If Jesus was setting shotgun, what would he be telling me? Would he be saying, okay, well, this morning, your son spent 45 minutes on the iPad and you said it's Tuesday, he's only going to spend 30 minutes. Jesus would not be saying that to me. He would be praising me. He would say, you are doing so well. Let's get you out of this. He would then try to navigate me through that. So sometimes I just put myself in stories like that where Jesus and I, he's helping me out. He's finding my way. And I don't know, that's something that helps me.
I am definitely a visual person. And I think that would help me a lot in picturing. It's almost like you decide to kick him, yeah, like you said, to kick him out. And that changes emotions and all of that too, where it's kind of your choice to do it and making it, not trying to pick like control, because not putting you in control, but just making you take more charge of your own emotional state in that. Yeah, Sarah, go ahead.
It gives you the power back, because that's what guilt is he's trying to take your power. He's trying to take God's power. And so when you kick him out, it's like, okay, I can do this. And then you're like, I don't have to do it alone though. And so that's when you invite Jesus in, because you can kick Satan out. Just make sure that you invite Jesus right back in.
Amy, do you have something to add or something else that you want to share?
This really goes along with what Sarah says. It's just a different way of looking at it. I think often the story we tell ourselves, we just tell ourselves the same story over and over and over again. I have a really specific memory of my daughter was 4 and she had a seizure. I did not know at that time she had the issues she did. And the nurse said to me, pick her up and hold her like she likes to be held, Mom. And I stood there frozen thinking,
my gosh, I don't know how she likes to be held. And I had such a rush of guilt. What a terrible mom am I? I don't even know how my own kid likes to be held. Like, I didn't know at that moment she had. Like, I hadn't noticed, because she's number five, that she pushed us away. Like, I didn't have the whole picture of her attachment issues. So I told myself that story for a really long time. Like, I can't believe you missed that, Amy Brown, even though you do have other kids and living life. So one of the practices that I do, and because I'm a writer, this helps me, I sometimes will write out, this is what happened. I lost it with my kid, or I am sick of summer and it's day three because I don't want to be around my kids, or whatever that story is. This is what happened. This is the actual thing that happened. This is the story I'm saying about myself. The story I'm telling myself is, I'm a bad mom. I'm impatient. I should have known this. I don't do enough. And then I rephrase it into, what is the truth? The truth of this matter is, and then I put God's word over it. This is the truth of the matter. The truth of the matter with my daughter in that moment when I didn't know how to hold her was she had reactive attachment disorder. She didn't let us hold her. I let that narrative bring me into shame and guilt for a really long time until I learned this practice of, like I said, this is what happened. This is what I'm telling myself, but this is really the truth as God sees it, or as somebody, some other person sees it that has a bit of better perspective than you do when you're in that guilt and shame funnel that you can't get out of.
I recently had a heated discussion. I wouldn't call it an argument, just a growth discussion, something euphemism that makes it sound way better than it really was, with my husband about how often I feel like, I don't know if it's a woman thing or a mom thing or what, but we tell ourselves lies all the time. It can be body image, like, because I didn't lose the baby weight in 3 months, I'm not worth being in pictures with my kid or anything like that. And one of the things that he finally just came out and said is, you need to tell yourself the truth more often. And I don't understand it. Do you feel like it's harder to dig in and find the truth? Does that get easier the more you do it? Is that a practice that you have to, like, a muscle you need to build?
I definitely think it's a practice, because I have altered thinking. You know, we have altered thinking about body image. We have altered thinking about what kind of mom we need to be. And I do think it's something that needs to be. It is a practice. I can tell you, I've been doing it for years. I'm quicker to go to that than I used to be. And I notice in my own body what guilt makes me feel like. I feel anxious. I feel like all tight. And so when I notice that, I'll go, okay, wait a minute. I need to go do this practice. I don't always do it like the minute of, a lot of times the next day, but it is a practice. You need to just, and like what Sarah said, that imaginative prayer, that's a practice. Unfortunately, for most of us, we just stay in that guilt and shame hole. Even though we know we can pray, we just don't feel like praying, or we just can't get out of the image we see of ourselves. It has really changed the way that I look at guilt with my kids, especially my kids with behavioral issues, because they haven't gotten better, honestly. I've had to learn that skill, and I'm grateful for it.
Do you have a specific book that you write these down or anything where you can go back and look at them when you're really feeling the guilt?
Yes, I have a journal. I'll put promises of God. And, you know, sometimes when you read through a journal, you're thinking, it's been 35 years that I'm still struggling with this. But honestly, I have seen myself grow in this area. So I would tell your listeners, I would encourage them. And sometimes you feel like you just struggle with the same thing over and over again. But this is something I have seen growth in myself, because I have been faithful to do it. It just changes the narrative is what it does. It interrupts the negative narrative and shines truth on the actual narrative. And there are times you do blow it. Okay, I'm not saying that you can pretty up a time you've totally blown it, but God's grace is in that. And I always also say, talk to yourself like you would a friend. If Carrie or Sarah came to me and said, I just lost it because blah, 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 I would be like, okay, yeah, you lost it. It's okay. But we don't talk to ourselves like we would our friends. That's a kind of another way to look at that practice.
Carrie, what about you? What things have helped you in your acute state of mom guilt?
I would say one of the things that has helped me just recently in the last year is that I've been diving into what some counselors and some programs call like my origin story. And what this has been for me is looking at, what are the lies that I have believed about myself, that I'm not good enough, I can never do this well enough. Just stories from, you know, my childhood. We all have things that have happened to us, whether it was from the way we were raised or other people having an impact, you know, something that some kid said to you in second grade that sticks with you even into, you know, being in your 40s or older. What I've learned to do is to identify those lies. And a lot of times it's just me being aware of my thoughts of, like, these are the self-criticisms that I'm telling myself all the time. And then looking and then using that journal, I'm going to piggyback off what Amy was saying, journaling through those stories. And through prayer, I've been doing this with a trained person who she works with some of us at church into kind of working through your origin story. There's a podcast by Adam Young that kind of dives into this, and working through that with her. Again, it's been that out loud prayer, that imaginative prayer that Sarah talks about, where I'm just asking God to show up in those situations and I see him in them and realize that he was there, even though maybe I didn't realize that he was there as a young child, but he was there. And there's just been a lot of healing in my mind and through some of this self-criticism and the guilt that I've dealt with. Also have this bracelet that I wear that says progress over perfection. And I know it's so cliche to say focus on the positive, but I am the first person to see every negative thing about myself. Even in my kids, I tend to always see the things they need to improve. And I read this book called Practicing Affirmation, and it really helped me a lot to see Christ in my spouse, to see Christ in my kids, and also to see Christ in myself, and that God is working and he's not finished. I would also just encourage your listeners that, you know, Romans says that there is no condemnation in Christ. And I feel like that's just so powerful. That's a verse that I have been camped out in lately, that no one condemns us and we should not condemn ourselves. We need to lay that at the feet of Jesus and say, you don't condemn me, right? He told the woman, there's no one here to condemn you. Go home and sin no more.
Carrie, you kind of hinted at this a little bit, and I kind of want to talk about this really quick. It's a little side trail, but I feel like counseling always has a stigma, some kind of shame added to it. And I'm learning more and more that we need to break that down because so many people could benefit from it. So real quick, for you going through mom guilt or grief or whatever, have any of you used counseling, and was it helpful to you, just for anyone who's considering it, to not feel alone and not feel any shame in the need for it? Sarah, go ahead and start.
I laughed when you, yeah, I spend a lot of time with my therapist, and actually mine moved. I really think it was as devastating as if a close family member would have moved, because I had to go through the whole thing again. And I remember I was just recently talking to Amy and I'm like, I have to find a new therapist, and I didn't want to do it, but I knew it was so vital for me. And it just helps having that person there that can help give you tools, just like everything that we've been talking about. These are things that we've heard from other people, including our counselors. And I personally think that it's been every member of our family has their own counselor. And then my husband and I have one together. And then our family has one. And they're all in the same building. We joke that we need like a punch card, like a BOGO. And I'm like, at what point do we get, like, you get three, you get one free? But I just think that it's a form of self-care that is vital to you, your mental state, your mental health.
Amy, go ahead.
I agree with Sarah. I call it adult supervision inside my head when I go to my therapist, because she helps me reframe things. And I think there is a stigma, but it's self-care. Each one of my non-special needs kids have gone because they have special needs siblings. We've always been very open in our family to the tools that a therapist can help you and give you. But I would say that I think people get scared about therapy for a lot of reasons. Number one, it seems weird to talk to a stranger about your stuff. Actually, it's kind of freeing because they have no skin in the game. They're not your friend that's going to talk to somebody else. They're not going to tell anybody at church. It's kind of freeing to go to this neutral person whose job is to help you, just like you would go to a physician. And also, I would say, as far as therapy goes, sometimes you have to try more than one, and that's okay too. I think that is one of the best decisions we made as a family, to make sure that whoever needed therapy and needed to talk to somebody, it wasn't like a reflection on me, like, oh, I'm a bad mom, this kid needs to talk to somebody about something. No, it's just another team member that's helping me in our family life. I always encourage people.
I love how you make it a team member, and that helps you. For me, when I look at teachers and counselors and therapists and all of that as a team member, it reminds me that I'm not carrying the whole weight of parenting on my own, that God has placed some amazing people to help give tools where I am not talented or gifted or even equipped to do. So I love that you brought that in. Carrie, what about you? What do you want to add?
I think I would just like to add that I think it's just so important. I know that I felt really guilty over the last year because I was spending so much time working through, we called it a journey group. And this person, she's not a trained counselor yet, but she's been trained by the Allender Center out of Seattle that does the story of origin work is what it's called. And it was so important for me to spend that time doing that because it really has given me the tools to go back and face that guilt and say, okay, this is what God says about me. Let's think about my story of origin. Where is this coming from? Let's pray through this and let the Lord have control even over my mind and my heart and to give that back to Him.
Before we move on to talking a little bit more about faithfulness in this journey, do you have anything to add for tips or advice to any moms dealing with mom guilt? Yeah, Sarah.
I would say don't compare yourself to other moms. It's so easy to get into that trap, especially whenever you have social media. You're comparing your everyday situation to their highlight reels. And so they're posting their Pinterest perfect stories. And I'm just trying to make sure my son's teeth are brushed before noon. So I think a lot of guilt comes from that comparison. And that's what I would just tell moms that are dealing with that is Jesus isn't comparing you to Sally who sits in the pew ahead of you. Her kids are perfect. They're always dressed nice. They're sweet. They're actually taking notes. Your children are, you're trying to keep them from going under the pews and pulling on other people's feet. That's okay. Jesus isn't comparing you to her. So you don't compare yourself to her either. So I spent a lot of time comparing myself to other people. And whenever I stopped doing that, a lot of pressure was lifted and I was able to enjoy my life a lot better.
I just did an interview with Merit Ansah. I'm not sure if you know who she is, but it just came out last week and we were talking about idols and identity issues in motherhood. And one of the things that was most powerful, you basically just said and summed up, was that God doesn't compare our motherhood to anyone else's. And I'm a pastor's wife. It's new. So it's something I'm still getting used to, but I'm actually probably the one that moms are looking around going, I'm so glad that my kids aren't like that. Like we're not the perfect kids all dressed. I'm like sitting in the back so we can be quiet. And my kids, my two-year-old has to pick her own clothes and has to be pink. And the clothes don't match and the kids are wild, but they're still getting in there. But just remembering that God picked us for our family for a reason, with our talents, with our faults, with all of that. And that He's not comparing how well we do with our children based off of how another mom does for her very different children as well. So thanks for that reminder. That was really helpful to me. So we're going to talk a little bit about faithfulness because it's really important to me, obviously, with Bridge of the Faithful. And I see this bridge as two parts. And the first part is that God built that bridge. We had nothing to do with putting that bridge between us and God, and that He built that there, that He wants us there, despite how scary the chasm looks underneath and how scary it might be even to step that first step onto the bridge. So with that said, in your journey as a special needs mom, as a mom of many children, many different transitions, different ages, all of that, how has God proven to you in all of that, in the darkest and the happiest times, how has He proven to you that He is always faithful? Go ahead, Carrie.
I think for me, it's just been seeing how He shows up even when I feel like I've messed up, and just how He shows up in times of chaos. He shows up in times of trauma. And for instance, when my kids were really little, so my older two boys who are older than my son with special needs, they are 18 months apart. And then the next two are 22 months apart. I look back and they were basically kind of parceled out to different family members when we spent over 2 months in the hospital with our third child. And there were times that I just felt so extremely upset and just that tug and pull because, you know, I couldn't be with them, or if I was with them, I couldn't be with our son in the hospital. And God was just so faithful. And honestly, now, like, I'll talk to our older two boys about it, and all they remember was the fun they had with their aunt, or the time they went to grandma's house, or just all those different things. And so just to see His faithfulness in that. And then on the other hand, with our daughter, she's had a little bit of what I would call little T traumas. Just, she was about 2 years old when our son ended up with about 10 surgeries in 15 months. And so, of course, you can imagine, like, she's struggling with, you know, mom not being there and kind of being in and out. And So we've just seen some anxiety in her, and she doesn't like to be the center of attention, and she's just really struggled with some things. And God has provided. Just one of the things he provided for her was doing horseback riding lessons. And there's just this amazing lady who just kind of has a heart for kids who struggle. And she has just come out of her shell. She's gained confidence. It's been a faith-based kind of program, and just that God will provide those things, and just to ask for them, and he will. And even when we don't ask for them, he still gives them to us. And so that's just a couple small ways that I've just seen his faithfulness through our journey.
How about you, Sarah?
I also journal, and I know it's a surprise because we're all writers, but we all journal. For me, one of the things that whenever I felt a lack of faithfulness on my part, and I actually felt that God wasn't faithful to me, was I don't even know where I heard somebody one time just, they had said that they always write down three things they're grateful for every day. And this was years ago, like I said, this was back in 2012 when my son was diagnosed. I thought, okay, well, it can't hurt. And so I started writing every day three things that I was grateful for. And a lot of days it was coffee and that I woke up. I mean, it was literally that basic. But once I opened myself up to the gratitude, I was like, oh, it's such a beautiful day. Look, my flowers are so pretty this year. And then, oh my gosh, the person at the hotel, because we traveled so much for my son with his doctors, every 28 days we would fly out east. And I was exhausted. Our family was separated all the time. And instead of focusing on that, it opened myself up to the gratitude of, well, I met this person. So we got to know a lot of people in the hotel where we're still friends with. I still email somebody that she's even moved on to a different hotel. She's on the, you know, on the East Coast. And we still email each other occasionally just to keep up. Those are the kind of things that I would suggest, just really open yourself up to that gratitude. Because once I did, I really started to see the way that God was shining through in my life. And sometimes it is in those small moments that really make the biggest impact over time.
So did you feel like your lack of ability to do all the things that you wanted with everybody, did that kind of highlight how God did it for you and took care of your family in spite of how much you were pulled in so many different directions?
Absolutely. It was like Carrie said, that my son is 20 now. I thought for sure I had messed him up beyond redemption. I knew that he just wasn't going to be close to me because I was gone for 3 years. I was gone 1 week a month. I asked him recently, this was actually last year in COVID, I asked him if he wanted to go to Walmart with me. And we put the masks on, we went to Walmart, and I just said, did you feel neglected? I'd braced myself. I did not ask that question for so long because I just thought, it makes me almost cry, because I thought for sure he was just going to tell me, yeah, I did, but you were an okay mom. I knew that that was the answer. And he looked at me and he said, Mom, I don't remember what we did. I just remember you always wanted to do something with me. And he got to spend time with Grandma, like Carrie said. We have people in the church that I would not have accepted help if I just absolutely didn't need it. I was on the other coast. Somebody had to go pick up my son. And so those are the moments where God shines through, and he does. He takes care of you. You just have to open yourself up to it and say, okay, some other people are going to have to step in and help me, and that's okay. And that's where you got to kick the guilt out, because that gives them the opportunity to help you, which is a blessing for them as well. So God will provide. You just have to be willing to accept it. I wasn't good at it for a long time, but I eventually got better.
I love how you brought up the asking for help thing, because I feel like in our culture, especially, the women must be able to do everything. They have to work. They have to, this year, they have to homeschool. They have to work. They have to be the full-time mom and all of that. And asking for help is, for me, definitely an issue, because I'm sure for me, it's pride and having to admit that I can't do everything. But I love how you brought that up. So moms out there that are afraid to ask for help, while I'm afraid to ask for help, I love when people ask me for help. So you are going to bless them in that way. And I know it's almost afraid of rejection as well if you ask for help and don't get it. But God is always going to provide. So even if someone says no and it's something you really need, he is going to provide that for you. Amy, I'm going to skip you for a second because I think Carrie might have something specific to share with this. Carrie, is it something with this?
Yeah, I just want to share too that, like you said, it's not all on us, and that other people are going to pour into your kids. And I've seen this so much this year with my 16-year-old and 18-year-old. They're basketball coaches, and my son's teacher at his homeschool class was a gentleman who just really poured into him this year. And I saw how that affected him and how they just had good discussions and good rapport and what that did. And so it isn't all on us. God is going to provide, you know, whether it's family members, teachers, coaches, other people that are going to pour into our kids because they're also being called to be faithful. And that's how God works, because it's not just all on us, and God will be faithful with that.
Amy, what about you?
Well, first of all, let me just say, I agree with what everybody else said, because we're not meant to do this alone. I think we get in our little tunnel and say, oh, I just have to do it all myself, but we're not meant to do it alone. I was just going to share two things. Number one, our house is pretty chaotic with two kids with reactive attachment disorder. I mean, we had alarms on the door. We had hide the knives. We had a lot of chaos. And I worried a lot about my older kids. But one of the things that I remember doing is the whole looking for life and beauty in the everyday small moments. And so when I look back at my journal and on calendars, I had written things that I had done. Like I took one kid out for ice cream, or like Sarah took her son to Walmart. All the things that I thought they were going to remember. Do they remember the chaos, my older kids? Yes. But they're amazing adults that have hearts for people who don't always act like they should. I have a son who's an elementary school teacher in a really rough neighborhood in Chicago. And he has a heart for those kids that I don't think he would have had if he hadn't lived in our house. And that was, I was so worried that we'd mess them all up. Life is happening all the time. And if we take the time to see the life and the beauty, which is God, in the little moments in our life, I think that'd be a little bit help. It'd be an encouragement to know that and not feel like I've screwed them all up. My oldest son, Davis, this is kind of a side story. When he left for college, he sat me down and said, Mom, thank you so much for always believing in me and just being there for me. And I was looking at him all sweet, like, thank you for saying that. And then later, my husband and I were like, really? He does not know all the times we worried about him and thought, how's he going to make it in the world? You know, all this thing. So I really think that, yes, there will be hard things they remember, but God's grace does cover a lot of our mistakes. And then I want to go back to the help thing quickly. One more thing about help. I don't mean to jump back, but a friend of mine once said to me, I wanted to help you so much, but you wouldn't tell me how. I didn't know how to help you. So it's okay to tell people what we need, because as I said, when I started talking, we're not meant to do it alone, and we are robbing other people of journeying along with us if we don't accept their help. I think that's a really important thing to remember.
I think that's a good segue into the other half of my bridge of the faithful. That to me is understanding a little bit more of what it means to be faithful to God, how to step onto that bridge of that God gave us to walk toward him. And that is not saying that in any way, shape, or form God's faithfulness depends on our ability to be faithful to him. You know, we are not asked to hold up that bridge. We're just asked to stand on it, to make that first step. And then God carries us through that. So sometimes it's as little as, not that this is a little thing, but something short, like writing those three things you're thankful for every day and how God will abundantly expound on that in our lives, or just doing anything just to walk toward God, whether that's making sure that you make it a point to sit and do devotions every day so that you're working on your relationship with God or something. You're stepping toward God in a way. And again, God's still going to be faithful to you whether you have the ability to be faithful to him or not. In what ways in your motherhood journey have you strived to take those steps toward God, and how has he met you in that? Go ahead, Sarah.
I don't come from a theological background. I don't have any formal education. So when I went through my temper tantrum phase after my son's diagnosis, I didn't know how to meet God. And what I found was he would meet me. All I had to do was just be willing to open myself up to him. And sometimes that looked like taking my headphones out while I'm cooking and making sure the TV's off and just being still, just listening. Sometimes that meant whenever I went for a walk, I wasn't listening to my favorite podcast. But you know, sometimes it's a matter of just allowing him the space to come into your life. It doesn't have to be every morning at this time for this long, doing this many things and this many scriptures and looking through this many versions. And I thought it had to be perfect. And it's something that I still struggle with. I struggle with it every day because I want to do it every morning at 5:30. I want to wake up before my house wakes up and I do this. And if I sleep in, I still get that moment of panic and I might miss it one day. And that's okay. So for me, I think a lot of times of meeting God in those spaces is just allowing him, he's there. You just have to step into it with him and allow yourself to be there with him.
Go ahead, Carrie.
I just want to piggyback off what Sarah was saying. One thing that I learned kind of when my kids were really little and I had three kids, three and under, is to wake up in the morning and just start a prayer and then just continue that conversation throughout the day. I think I read that verse about, you know, pray without ceasing. And I thought, that is crazy. Like, you can't do that. It's, how do you pray without ceasing? How do you pray without stopping? And so I think it is just that awareness of his presence, and that, you know, you get up. Sometimes I pray, you know, Lord, make me a blessing today, or Lord, show yourself to me today. Pray in the shower, and then just to continue that, and don't say amen until you go to bed, and just treating God, because I mean, the Bible says he is our friend, talking to him like he is a friend. I think sometimes he is God. He is holy. I'm not saying that he's not, but I think sometimes we treat him like he's so unreachable, and he's not. And I think through our journey with Toby, that's my son with special needs, I have just learned that his grace and faithfulness, and, you know, Lamentation says his mercies are new every morning. And I seriously just picture that the sky opens up and they rain down on me every day. And that's just a beautiful way to start your days and to be aware of God's presence.
Go ahead, Amy.
That's one of my favorite verses about his compassions are new every morning. I always tell myself that, like with the prodigal son, how the father ran to the prodigal, that God is always running towards us. And for me, I've been a pretty consistent morning girl, and not everybody's a morning girl, but silence for me is important because my brain is going all over the place constantly. So to be quiet and hold my hands open to God. And sometimes I don't pray a lot. Sometimes my prayer is silent. Sometimes it's the Lord's prayer. Sometimes it's praying for my kids. But just taking a few moments, and as Carrie and Sarah know that I love to be outside. So whether it's outside or in my office, just taking a little moment to quiet my soul and just remember those promises of he's new, his compassion's new every morning. He gives us what we need, and he's always with us and coming towards us. And those kinds of things center me as I start my day. And even throughout the day, I will kind of pull myself aside for a minute and just have some quiet. For some reason, that practice grounds me very quickly. I try to quiet my brain. Not always successful. That's kind of what I have consistently done over my course of motherhood.
And I kind of see a theme where you all are talking about, to tie this full circle, that God is faithful in giving you the strength to be faithful to him as well, in either giving you the verses to meditate on or the blessing of time to go out and enjoy his creation and all of that. That's my favorite thing about God's faithfulness, is that it always carries ours. It gives us the ability, and it's always exponential to anything that we could ever do. And that always gives me strength and hoping and trusting in his faithfulness in the future. So before we go on to talk about the verse, Sarah, why don't you tell us where we can find your podcast or what social media you guys like to do? And there's going to be show notes where I'm going to put any individual website or resource that they suggest either on this episode or later that they want me to share. So there's going to be lots of good resources there. But Sarah, where can people find you, and where can people find your podcast?
You can find us on any of the platforms where you listen to your favorite podcasts. And you can find us at Take Heart Special Moms. We also have a website, takeheartspecialmoms.com. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Take Heart Special Moms. We love to hear from our listeners. And if anybody has any questions, or they just want to feel like somebody knows what they're going through, or they just want to listen, we love getting emails. All three of us check that daily, or at least one of us is in there every day. And that's takeheartspecialmoms@gmail.com.
And I can say firsthand that I have sent out little messages to them when an episode either touched me or came at the time where God was specifically providing that resource to me. I'm pretty sure I was the last one. I was sitting in a Kohl's parking lot bawling my eyes out because it was a particularly rough day in the mom journey. And my closest Kohl's is 40 minutes away, which is why my husband told me to go there so that I would have some time in the car to like decompress from the awful day. And listening to them really helped get me to a good spot and the good ugly cry that every mom needs to have every once in a while. They have graciously and patiently dealt with all of my messages that I send, and always so encouraging. So I strongly suggest reaching out to let them know that they're a blessing to you, because that's always going to encourage podcasters. It's kind of a weird thing for podcasters to put put this out there and we don't always hear back from people. So if you in any way feel an inkling to reach out to them and let them know if they've encouraged you somehow, I can tell you that will mean the world to them to know that their time that they have sacrificed for listeners and for me specifically, that that will mean a lot to them. So Sarah, go ahead. What were you going to say?
I would also say if there's something that you want us to touch on, we are always looking for that. We met each other actually just a little over a year ago. And one of the things that drew us to each other is that our mom journey has been, and our faith journey has been so vastly different. But the fundamental is the same, is that we have a love for Jesus and we have a love for each other. And I would just encourage everybody just to know that you're not alone. And so that's why we're doing this. We have seen how God has worked through our lives and brought other people into our lives. And if there's something that we can add to the rotation, we would love to hear about that or just to talk to you. So thank you for putting that out there.
So like I said, look in the show notes if you're like me and you're listening in the car on the way to Kohl's needing an ugly cry or anything like that. I also listen in the shower. Those are my two places. So I don't usually have a pen and pencil or any way to really pause and write things down. So I will have those in the show notes, links to all of their social media, to where you can find their podcast and any website things or any extra resources that they add, which I know I've already said, but just to reassure you that that will be there in the show notes so that you don't have to worry about sitting down and writing things down right now. So they have chosen the amazing verse John 16:33 as their closing verse. So Carrie, why don't you tell us a little bit more about why that is such a meaningful verse to you three?
So when we met to discuss starting our podcast, we were trying to think of a name for it. And I can't remember, one of us brought this up and the thought about, you know, special needs moms, all moms, we all need courage. We all feel like we experience a lot of trouble in the world. And so John 16:33 came up and this is what it says. And Jesus is speaking. I have said these things to you, that in me, you may have peace. In the world, you will have tribulation, but take heart. I have overcome the world.
This has been episode 57 of the Bridge of the Faithful podcast entitled, An Honest Discussion on Mom Guilt with Take Heart. For show notes, go to botfpodcast.com/episode/57. You can find us on social media at Facebook or Instagram.